this is the Wild Clearwater Country. Well, we've got a rambunctious crew here today.
All right.
James and Gary. And we're going to have some pretty lively open discussion. We're sharing some firsthand experiences of ours in the wild, in the wilderness. So buckle your seatbelts for that. And a couple of quick announcements. August 11th through the 13th, there will be a Coeur d'Alene Salamander monitoring trip to the North Fork Clearwater. Please get a hold of Adrienne Boland at Friends of the Clearwater. You can contact her by calling their office or swinging by. We're up above the Shirt Shack, right very close to this studio, in fact. And also, coming up every week, Adrienne, she leads a monitoring trip out to Porcupine Creek near Beauville as part of a project with Wildland CPR to monitor decommissioned roads. It's a weekly trip. You can join her. I believe folks usually meet up at 8 a.m. on Sunday mornings at the co-op for that trip, but please contact her as well to tell her you'd like to go. Those are two of our upcoming events, and I think I'll go ahead and announce this one. It's a little bit early on, but coming up in a few weeks, August the 23rd, we will mention this again. There's a town hall meeting. And Senator Larry Craig will be in town. So, you have any announcements to...
I think that just about does it.
All right. Well, like I said, we're going to be sharing our wilderness experiences today, and this idea kind of evolved out of some news that's been happening, been reported about for the last week or so, I believe since the 26th of July. An event that happened down in the Middle Fork of the Salmon River. And if you know that country, you know it's in the heart of the Frank Church River, No Return Wilderness, 100-mile stretch there. That is pretty highly used in the summertime by rafting groups. And there was a log jam there following some major flash floods on some creek tributaries to the Middle Fork. And following a couple days... there, the Forest Service decided to go ahead and blast out that log jam for the sake of convenience, in my opinion, and contrary to the Wilderness Act, and that water body is fully within designated wilderness. And so we're going to talk a little bit about what wilderness actually is and what it really means.
Yeah, and that's a really an interesting story, Will, because... it's kind of silly. They waste all this money on it, and the people, the rafts that... backed up there, they were portaging around. They had a great experience. You know, it was neat seeing this natural event come down and bring these logs and these trees there and there, and seeing it do that to the river. I mean, people were pretty excited. They're having a good time, and just, you know, yeah, it took them a little bit of muscle power, but there was a trail right there to you know, uninflate the rafts and haul them around. People were having a great time. They thought, wow, this is a neat experience. And here come the Forest Service and spends all this money to blow up, which I just can't imagine that. Going there, and I think probably dangerous as well, goes in there and blows up this log jam, a jam that would have been removed, you know, come high water anyway. And I don't know how much money, public money of our tax dollars they spent on this project. And they sort of ended the opportunity these people had of having an unorganized and spontaneous kind of wilderness experience. And I think that's an important issue. So we'll talk a little bit about that and try to tell some of our wilderness experiences here on the air. So that's kind of what we're going to talk about this week. Well, it's time. This is August. It's sort of a month that a lot of people get out and visit the wilderness.
That's right. It is a great time, and I think we're going to go ahead and do that. Let's just go ahead and start talking about our wilderness experience. And I've been putting a lot of thought into the Salmon River thing, and you know, on the face of it, it might seem that this is a minor intrusion, not a huge deal to blow up a little piddly log jam for these folks to just head on down river. Let them just go on down there and get their thing done and let them have a good time. But it's a bad statement to the public and to the media that wilderness is just kind of this mushy thing, and it's not really important that we uphold to the letter of the law and the spirit of the law, the Wilderness Act. And I think it just opens up a lot of the wilderness deconstructionists and naysayers to kind of have a field day with this and use the Forest Service as an example, as the managing agency, not even taking wilderness as seriously as lots of wilderness proponents do.
And one of the problems I see with this, Will, is it treats this wild river like an interstate highway. It's not an interstate highway. The idea isn't to get as many people down as fast as you can and have them not experience the wilderness. And part of that experience is the rough water. I mean, do they have to go in there now and blow up the rapids? In fact, the Forest Service convicted somebody of doing that on a river that was very, very rough and almost unrunnable. And they said, no, that's part of that wild river. Let's leave it that way. If you want to go in there and try to take big machines and smooth out this river so it's a lot easier and not dangerous, or so people can go down faster. No, it's part of the experience having these rapids. It's part of the experience, you know, if there's a natural event, bring some logs down in there. You kind of get out and walk around on this. There's trails in there. Walk your stuff around on the trail. I think that's part of the kind of the fun thing about the experience. So I think we can talk about that. In fact, I think many of the people, according to some of the reports, were having a good time down there. They thought it was great. They said, wow, this is a wonderful event, seeing something like this, sort of a once-in-a-lifetime event. And I think that's what we'll talk about when we talk about some of our personal experiences, Will.
Yeah, a real wilderness experience, something happening that really is out of the bounds of your control. And yeah. What can you do but give? You got to flex and go with it and try to adapt. And in this situation, a lot of the folks, including some folks who own private land adjacent to this area at the Middle Fork Ranch, were really generous and ingenious, and this kind of brought out the best in a lot of people.
A lot of people, and they just got those boats around, they uninflated them, hauled them around into rafts, and people got on their way.
Yeah, even a handicapped person took a horseback portage.
Yeah.
Someone who was wheelchair-bound, and a recovering cancer patient, a lady who'd just gone through radiation and chemotherapy recently,
had a great experience.
The portage.
Yeah. Had a great experience. Well, I want to kick this off with
a
story. And this is one of my great wilderness experiences. And everybody, you have to fit in. Everybody's got to have a chance here to tell some of their stories. But I'm going to start with one here. And it sort of fits into this. This has been about, I'm getting old, Will. This would have been 19 years ago when my little sister, my little baby sister, was out of high school. So we decided to do a trip, and we wanted to go pretty far in, and go backpacking into some of the most remote country in the lower 48. And the farthest place you can get from a road, it's not the biggest undeveloped chunk of land. That's actually in and around the Frank Church Wilderness here in north central Idaho, the headwaters of the Selway, which are in that wilderness, and of course the Salmon River country, Middle Fork. That's the largest chunk of undeveloped land in the lower 48. This other one's a little bit rounder. It's not as big, but a little bit rounder. It's the southeast corner of Yellowstone. So it includes part of Yellowstone National Park, the Teton Wilderness, and the Washakie Wilderness. So we, in nice July, we decided, we're going to do this in 1987. So we threw on our packs and got dropped off. My parents took a trip to Yellowstone Park, and so they dropped us off. And I was quite a bit older than my sister, 12 years older, so that's, you know, I was kind of the old man here. And she, had quite an experience visiting this country. So
this is just you and your sister?
Yes, my sister. So we start hiking up there, and there's a place we had to ford this big creek. And, of course, I fell in and got all wet. And she laughed. She thought it was funny. But that's part of the, there's not bridges everywhere, you know. It's a big, deep creek. You know, I'm in there. So I get out. She was just having a good time laughing at it. And we saw this moose and this calf. Came near our camp one night, and that was pretty exciting. We thought, we didn't want to get between the baby and the mom, of course. The dangerous thing to do. And then we came up to this beautiful meadows, a huge meadows up in the mountains, up there in the Absaroka Mountains, called Eagle Creek Meadows. And we saw these interesting clouds, you know, kind of this mackerel, kind of fish scale, cloudy sky. Didn't think a whole lot of it. but beautiful, beautiful place, and came over this pass and dropped into Yellowstone Park, one of the tributaries of the Upper Yellowstone River, which is a spectacular spot of land. So we walked down there, and that night we made camp on a little stream. And we're all, of course, very careful with our food, hanging it up in the tree, in between a couple trees with pulleys and all this stuff, because that's black bear and grizz country. There's grizz in there, too. So we just wanted to make certain that, you know, none of the bears got our food. And we didn't want to run in, of course, to any grizzly bears too close on the trail. Next day, we started out, and we noticed it's an overcast day. In fact, for this high up in the mountains, it was fairly warm. It was very muggy. It was kind of almost humid. And I thought, huh, this is kind of weird. And just all these clouds, and we were hiking that day. And it was getting toward the end of the evening, and then the clouds started to get darker and darker. And we have, you know, and we figured, well, we've still got, you know, at least four or five more hours of daylight. So we'll be walking for another 2 or 3 hours at least, or four hours. And it got dark, and then it starts to rain. We're coming out, and we're now in the big meadows in the Upper Yellowstone. Before it comes into Yellowstone Lake, Yellowstone River, these huge meadows, 15 miles long, this meadow complex, and anywhere from 1 to 3 miles wide, willow bottoms, all this stuff, beautiful country. You know, and surrounded by these mountains. And we were just coming out, and this big bolt of lightning hit this tree not far from us and pow, and drove the top of the tree. It was an old snag, shards into the ground. And so we said, well, let's not get out in the open. Let's go kind of sit this storm out. And then the wind started to blow, and it sounded like a jet engine taking off. And I said, well, we better get into some young trees. So we found these little lodge poles that were about maybe an inch and a half, 2 inches in diameter, little teeny trees, and the wind was just ferocious, and it started to blow really hard, and we just kind of hunkered down, and the rain was just coming, and hail was coming in all directions, and we just got soaked, and it seemed like this huge loud noise was going on for a few minutes, you know, almost a half hour is what it seemed like. It was probably only a few minutes at most, a couple minutes, and we just got dumped on, and it just this terrible windstorm. I was getting a little worried, but we were safe because we were under these little trees, and if they fell on us, it wouldn't hurt us. You know, they were 20 or 30 feet high at most, maybe not even that big, in these really skinny little trees, so it wouldn't hurt us. But we got thoroughly soaked and wet, and then we started hearing this noise with all this wind. These snap, these big trees were breaking them, just snap, 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 snap. Oh, and almost like popcorn. And the whole forest sounded like popcorn. All these big trees were snapping, and they were breaking about 10 feet off the ground from this windstorm. They're coming over. So we went on the trail. We went back after this storm event. Went out to the trail, and, boy, we couldn't hardly make any time. The trail was there. Of course, we didn't wish that somebody with the helicopter and the Forest Service came in, or Park Service came in and blew up all the logs in the trail. It was kind of fun. It was a neat experience seeing all this, all these trees, a wild experience, and we didn't know what was going on. And then that night, we barely made a mile in the next 3 or 4 hours because it was so much down there. But we came to the edge, kind of a meadow part, and camped at the edge of a meadow. And the clouds finally started to lift, and the sun peeked through, and we saw this big moose out in the meadow, and we saw this mother grizzly and this cub, which were really far away, so it was safe. They're walking away from us. We got the binoculars on. It was a great experience. And in a truly wild piece of country, and we accepted it on its terms. We didn't want somebody in there to kind of haul away all this dead wood, you know, for us, or to make it easy to for us to walk, because that's part of the wilderness experience. Yeah, they clear trails eventually, but that was a wild. We took it on its terms. And the next few days, we were walking out, and we saw a couple of helicopters or planes flying over. We went, yeah, I'm kind of mad. You know, I didn't want to see that, have that noise ruin my experience. But come to find out, this is one of the few recorded instances of a high elevation tornado touched down and blew down a swath of land about 15 miles by 1 mile wide up around Enos Lake, and then it touched down a few other places, probably near where we were, and all these trees were snapped over. And then, of course, we walked out on these trails, and in some places it wasn't easy going, but it was kind of a neat experience to see all the what Mother Nature did and accept the wilderness on its terms, not complain about, oh, I wish we had a lodge or a big building or a road here so we can get out of here. It was this was what wilderness is about, a wild place. We saw sandhill cranes, and one of the greatest things I've ever seen, we saw these big sandhill cranes start to fly. They kind of came toward us, and they were making a big racket. And this is in the days after, a couple days after, and we're still in the huge Yellowstone Meadows. And we had to ford the Thoroughfare River. There's no bridge there, so I had carried my little sister on my back. And then I carried my pack over and her pack over, and I was up to my waist on this river, the Thoroughfare River, and it was cold, and it was kind of silty from all the rain that had come and hail that had come from this storm. We got across there, and these handheld cranes were making their crazy noise, and then they came toward us, and it looks like they were chasing something. They were still in the air, but there's three of them, and they were trying to herd something away, and we saw the most amazing thing through the willows, and these short willows in the Yellowstone Meadows, there's these two coyotes. They're running right at us, and they didn't see us because these scanthill cranes didn't want them around their nest site, and their nesting area. And they were chasing these and making all this noise. These coyotes, and they were running away from these cranes, and they went right past us, and they didn't even pay us attention. So that's my story about accepting the wilderness on its terms. Well, one of my wilderness stories for the week.
Wow, that's a fantastic story, Gary. Man, that's some really neat stuff. Lots of wildlife and, yeah, something about it, just those kind of events, really, especially in retrospect, I'm sure, mm-hmm. The next couple of days were probably even more just enthralling going through that experience together. Well, we're going to get into a little music here, and we're going to talk more about wilderness experience and hopefully have some more great stories coming up in just a few minutes. Thanks for joining us.
Sitting in the morning sun, I'll be sitting the evening come. Watching the ships roll in, then I watch them roll away again. Yeah. I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll in. Just sitting on the dock of the bay, it's time. I left my home. Like nothing's gonna come my way, so I'm just gonna sit on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. Sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time. Look like nothing's gonna change.
Welcome back, Wild Clearwater Country Show, KRFP Radio Free Moscow. Just listened to a great story. Man, that's good stuff. High elevation or high altitude tornado touchdown. That's pretty wild. I have a story to share, but James, do you have one ready? You want to jump on? All right, I'm going to do it. I'll do it. Well, my story, I grew up. I grew up backpacking, mostly started in Boy Scouts, started backpacking age 11, and mostly on the Appalachian Trail because I'm one of those back Easters. You know, I hate to admit it, it's the truth. And first time I really got to do a big trip after that, freshman year of college, my first week-long trip, we went to Big South Fork National Recreation Area, which is on the Tennessee-Kentucky state line. Pretty interesting country there. Cumberland River Gorge. And we were kind of a mixed group of experiences. There were a couple folks who'd spent some time doing this kind of thing before and a couple folks who had never stepped one foot in the woods, I believe, after experiencing this. We were kind of a rough-looking bunch, and some folks were wearing high-top tennis shoes that weren't waterproofed and carrying packs that were just, you know, way too large for the frame of the person. But we got down there to Big South Fork, and we didn't pay attention to the weather forecast at all, even though our friend's mom warned us that it might snow. You know, it's snow. It's March. It's in the south. Come on. And so we got down there, and the night we were going to just hike a short distance in and set up camp for the first night, there was a tornado. And so I believe the guys, we were in two separate cars driving down there, and the guys ended up getting a little room at this motel, and the girls, I think, spent the night in their car in some supermarket parking lot or something. And we met up the next day at the trailhead, and we had a ball. It was about 2.5-3 days of just great hiking, perfect weather. It was a little larger group than I was used to in backpacking, and a little more boisterous than I was used to, too. So it was a little bit difficult at times. But things really started to get fun and interesting when it started to snow. And it really started to snow once we were... I can't remember the National Forest here at Big South Fork, but once we were really deep in the woods on the John Muir Trail, and it started to snow these big, beautiful flakes, and I just remember thinking to myself, man, this is beautiful. Oh, this is such a beautiful hike. And then it started piling up, and we started to realize that we weren't very prepared for this. And being in a group of eight with some adequately prepared folks and some who weren't, we were kind of... we had to start looking out for each other a little more. And, well, about a foot and a half of snow later, we decided to set up camp for the night. And we set up camp, and instead of our usual two-person per tent situation, we kind of piled into two tents, kept each other warm, and woke up the next morning to, I'd say, a good 2.5 feet of snow on the ground. And not a clue of what to really do about it, because our original plan didn't really take into account any change in weather conditions. And so, fortunately, Al, who's one of those guys who can't go by any National Park Service or Forest Service, I guess, headquarters without seeing it as a shopping opportunity, he bought a guidebook on the trails to the area before we went. Thankfully, Al and his consumerist tendencies came through for us, and he had this book, and there were a couple of old cabins in this area, and so we started to seek these cabins out. And the first one we got to, after a couple hours of hiking in the snow, had been completely abandoned and was mostly in ruins. And so that left us with one other option. And so we hiked a good portion of the way towards this cabin through the, as it continued to snow this whole time. It probably snowed for about 3 or 4 days there until it quit finally. And it was, it's not western snow. It's that real wet snow, that you get back east and just sticks to you and gets everyone cold. And man, there's this one, girl, Christine, in the group who was wearing her high top Converse tennis shoes. And she started to show symptoms of hypothermia. She was losing stuff off of her pack. She started to get really faint and even dry heave. And so we camped in the snow for one more night. And then the next morning, we decided to leave four people behind, and the other four would continue on to try to find this other cabin that was supposedly out there. And so, let's see, Chris, Chad, Tara, and I continued on, and we had to ford a creek four different occasions along this trip, and each time we just took the shoes and socks off, walked across barefoot through the cold water as it snowed, and got to the other side and tried to wake our feet back up before putting our shoes and socks back on. And we brought with us a stove, a tent, and some food, and we realized after we crossed, I think the third time, we were looking at the gear we brought with us, and to our disgust, we kind of noticed that we hadn't brought any sleeping bags at all, and so we just had this terrible image of four naked, dirty, cold, huddling bodies sitting inside a tent around a stove to keep warm, and so that kind of spurred us on. And, you know, it was kind of a mixed bag of spirits at this time. Most of us were pretty optimistic. The folks we left behind weren't as optimistic, which is one of the reasons they didn't go. That was one of the deciding factors. Needed some high morale for this. And after a good 3 or 4 hours of hiking that second day, we came upon the backcountry lodge that was there in Big South Fork. And fortunately, it was a staffed cabin. There was a couple that was overseeing the cabin for the winter and just taking care of it. And they had a four-wheel drive truck, and the creek being pretty low, they got back and grabbed the rest of our friends who were huddling inside a tent to stay warm and brought them back, and we all spent a couple nights in this little cabin in Big South Fork. But that was the first time I was in a position where the environment threw me for a loop and really tested me and challenged me. It was a life-changing experience. And I remember it was for most of the people on that trip, and we still talk about it a lot today, especially my one good friend, or two good friends I still keep in touch with, who went on that trip with me. I think it guided us to where we are now, for sure. And Chris works for Backpacker Magazine in Boulder, and Al works on the Mississippi River as an ecologist, we have fond memories of that trip. And for me especially, I know that most of them are because of the challenge and the response required when that kind of challenge shows up is. It just kind of brings something out in you that maybe you don't see except from time to time, and it was just a wonderful experience. So there you go.
Wow. Well, that's good. You learned about what the Boy Scout motto is, and something like be prepared.
That's right. Be prepared.
All right. You got a story for us, James?
Sure. I'm not really thinking of a particular story. I just remember now as a kid, you know, late 70s, early 80s, my father would stock up on supplies, you know, big old 5-gallon plastic containers of water and of gas and of food, and we would go out into the, you know, bordering the wilderness on those roads out there in the Weedus Meadows area and places like that, and we'd camp for weeks at a time. And you know, that, like I say, that was the late 70s, early 80s, when the job market on reservations wasn't too accommodating, and so that was a way for us as a family to kind of escape from the financial requirements of running a home and running all the bills and all things of that nature. So you know, my father opted to take us out into the wilderness. And that's where we'd spend a lot of our summers growing up as a kid, and we have the opportunity to take friends with us. But I was remembering, the reason I remembered this was because you were talking earlier, Gary, about your wilderness experiences and you not wanting to disturb those. And I think those times like that as a child growing up is where I really began to understand the connection, I guess, that we have with the land that we live near, and to appreciate all of the different animals and the water, you know, everything that makes the wilderness what it is, you know. And we've had, in those times, I had bull elk run through our camp, you know, and there's times when we all got scared, spooked for something, and all moved into the teepee with my mom and dad,
yeah,
you know,
great.
My little brother. There were just so many times like that that I can kind of think back on and realize that those are times when I really began to appreciate the wilderness for what it was. And I guess I'm just thankful that my father and my mother fostered that type of an understanding to be able to track animals, know what they're doing, what the signs are, what the different clouds mean when they come overhead, so you can expect what kind of weather in the coming days. You know, things like that are really, I'm profoundly appreciative today. And so I guess that's my tidbit for wilderness stories, is just how it came to be within me, I guess.
Wow. That's a great story, James.
Yeah, right on.
That's good. A lot of us have that experience, you know, and sometimes, like the story I told, I forgot to look at the sky and didn't realize that we were in for a big one. Although we were prepared gear-wise, we had what we needed. We did get wet, but, I mean, we dried out and we had our rain gear. So, but it was, that's what it's about. It's, you know, learning. It is a connection experience when you're young. I remember doing that very young. My dad taking me right behind where I grew up here in the West, and we'd go hiking just behind our house a ways up in the Wasatch Mountains, or I'd go in the Uinta Mountains out in the eastern part, and we'd, you know, it was a great experience. So anyway, but Will, you know, I think we need, of course, to tell a couple more stories, obviously. But I have a song that we ought to play at some point, and I'm going to dedicate that song, it's the very first one, to the Forest Service as what they would like to have for a wilderness experience. It seems to be sort of their idea of the wilderness experience. So, number one, yeah. And we'll see. I don't know. We don't need to play it now.
Oh, let's play it.
Should we play it now?
Well, no, yeah. Let's wait till after a little bit. We'll play in a little bit. I got
it. Play a little bit.
Yeah.
I didn't put something you ready to play.
No. I'm gonna throw some music up right now, I think.
Okay.
And then we'll come back. We do have the Whopper of the Week coming up.
Mm-hmm.
We do have a special song from Gary, uh-huh, the great Garbanzo. Very fitting song. Oh, you got to see this album cover. That is classic. And we'll be back for more. Thanks. We'll be right back. All right. Little Velvet Revolver. Man, that's good rock. Well, we're back. Wild Clearwater Country Show. We're sharing our wilderness experience. We're just going to keep telling tales, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why not? Gary, do you have another story to share with us?
Oh, absolutely.
All right.
I've got a couple more stories here. But this is one of my really interesting and favorite stories. You have to be, you do have to be prepared. And this is kind of a humorous story. I was out on what they call a cedar mesa. It's down in southeastern Utah, high plateau country, pinyon juniper, just beautiful. And a lot of it's really the home of they call the ancient ones. It's really neat to see those the old stone structures there that the Anasazi, the ancient ones, put up back. And I guess most of them left that area about 1200 or something, so about 800 years ago. They left that country, and of course there were some droughts and stuff going on. Scientists think back then, of course nobody really knows why for sure they left, but that's but we were down there hiking in all this country. It was in it was for my birthday. I was there, and so on. It's in March 21st, and it's like it's this high desert plateau country, and we got up on the plateau, and we could see a change in the weather coming, and then it started to snow, and we got about 2 feet of snow, and we're walking, and instead of being smart, we decided to leave our compass in our packs, and so we just said, hey, that's, you know, we're just, and it was almost this whiteout condition, but we got very close to the canyon rim, and we could see just a little bit and say, oh, that's the canyon, and so we figured, yeah, we were okay, but we said, let's keep on pushing forth, so we kept pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing, and then we finally said, okay, it's time to set up camp. And so we set up, had this tent, and it kept on snowing that night, which was fine. I just would get up and go out there and just shake off the snow because we had the gear. We were set. You know, we were okay. But it just kept on snowing. And finally in the morning, you know, just before dawn, it cleared up. And my friend, he got up, and, you know, we were convinced we knew where we were. He looked, and here comes the sun. He goes, Gary, get up. The sun's rising in the west. And I said, I got up, and then I just started to laugh. I said, and what we'd done, there are these two canyons that paralleled each other. One was called Fish Creek, and the other was called Owl Creek. And we thought that we were going upstream and having Owl Creek to our right, but because it was so snowy, we'd done a complete 180, and so we were going down Fish Creek, kind of heading back from where we'd come. And the only part of it that we didn't plan so well for was that we'd planned on getting out that morning, and we were still about 16 miles from the car. So the snow had started to melt. We got our packs on. We had a few carrots and some honey left, and so we spent the rest. You know, we went the 15 miles, and then we got back to his car, and it was pretty late. And we stopped. We had a long drive home. We got home because we lived up on the Wasatch Front out of Salt Lake, so we had 400 or 500 miles to go. so we got there about 4 in the morning. But we stopped at every little town at the restaurants that were open, and we ate like about 5 or 6 meals on the way home because we were so hungry after having just carrots and just hiking as hard as we could through that snow that day. So that's a wilderness on its terms, you know. You have to sort of be prepared. We left our compasses in our packs saying, we can just do that. You know, we knew where we were going. It's kind of funny seeing him saying, hey, the sun's rising in the west. So he thought we knew where we were. It was really funny.
That's story.
That's good.
Well, should we take a little break here and do our weekly Whopper? What do you think?
It's time. Yes, do the little drumming here. Yes. The Whopper of the Week.
Whopper of the Week. And, of course.
Of course.
It has to go to those folks in the Salmon Chalice, the district ranger who made that call
to blow up the logs at a great cost and expense to the public.
That's right.
That would eventually wash out anyway. People were having a great time, even though there was a few rafts were backed up. They were having a good time out there camping, and they were just, you know, portaging around it. It was kind of a great experience. They sort of ruin it for all those people.
Yeah, the wrong person is in charge in that situation.
So they get the whopper for just spending all that money and flying on those helicopters and all that stuff just to try to blow up a few logs. And, of course, it took them a long time to do it because they were all afraid, you know, that they didn't want to hurt anybody. And so they were out there not knowing exactly what to do, and they tried to blow up some logs. Of course, it probably was pretty dangerous if they could have got the wrong charge in there, you know, if anybody was near there.
Yeah.
We're in a problem.
150 pounds of dynamite, yeah. That's a lot of boom.
Whoa.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's a pretty big firecracker.
Yeah, that is. Exactly.
And so I think it's kind of silly to do that. So they get the whopper of the week for Forest Service, Salmon Chalice National Forest, for doing that stupid.
Oh,
instead
man.
Of just letting the wilderness be wild, it would have washed out next year in the high water. You know, that would have been fine. You know, and down woody material is an important component of fish habitat. You know, instead of blasting it and having it go all the way down, it can create more fish pools there, but no.
And another interesting fact here that I discovered in reading more about this issue is that this is still considered the early season for that float, the Middle Fork. But a little bit later on, they put in downstream of that mm-hmm. log jam.
Yeah, they do.
And so the majority of folks don't even start where these rafters started. They start 25 miles downstream.
Right.
At Indian, Indian Hill, or what's the landing strip down there?
Creek or something?
Indian Creek, as opposed to Boundary, Boundary Creek.
That's right.
And so the vast majority of people floating this trip would have avoided the log jam anyway,
mm-hmm.
and it would have washed down next spring.
Yeah.
Another interesting point, too, we had a friend call in just a little while ago here to the radio station, wanted to share a nice tidbit of information of his time down there on the salmon. He was hiking up to Stanley Hot Springs.
Oh, Selway.
In the Selway, actually. And he
in
was
the
up there
wilderness.
And talking about wilderness and talking about the wilderness ethic and wilderness experience. He wanted folks to know that in talking with some Forest Service people down there, after fording Stanley Creek, which is pretty iffy,
mm-hmm.
He kind of asked them if they would be interested in putting a bridge back there. And the people he talked to said no, that's how you have to confront wilderness on its own terms. So, you know, it'd be nice if we saw a little consistency, too.
In the Forest Service, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
One on one hand, oh, no, on the other
hand.
Yeah,
kind of a opinion thing.
All
anyway.
Right. Well, Will, I don't know if now's the time to do it, but do you have any other stories here, James?
No, I'm...
Why don't we go ahead and play this song and dedicate this?
This is dedicated to the Forest Service, and it's kind of what they think the wilderness experience ought to be, and it's a Dana Lyons tune, and I think you'll get it once we play it.
Cruising across the USA, taking in the land, wider than a Cadillac, longer than a van. Capacity 16 children, 4 tubes of old toothpaste, 3 tanks for the gasoline, 2 tanks for the waste RV. RV. Mom and Dad in the front seat, country on the radio, Tim and Jim at the table, rock on the stereo. Sue and Lou in the back room, trumpet and clarinet. Sissy's still in the bathroom, Junior's pants are wet. RV. RV. The modern cowhands riding velvet saddles. On horses made of fiberglass they fly. Air-conditioned covered wagons cross the prairie. The pioneering spirit never dies. RV. RV. The tenters watch with wonder, the bikers are afraid, the rangers take their aspirin, the animals run away, the truckers see a roadblock, The wagons see a wall, the compact see a mountain, the horses see a stall RV. RV. From Jersey to Miami without stopping, from Texas to Alaska in one day. The stories of these heroes are astounding. The tickets and the tolls they had to pay. RV. RV. So if you're out there cruising on a U.S. interstate, and you see that great white wonder, please make no mistake. On the road there is no justice, might always makes right. The suburban yacht is the king of the road, so you better get that right. RV. RV.
Yeah! Get it on there! Get it on there!
Whoa! Easy, girl.
Wow. All right. The cowboy of the 21st century, man.
Yeah.
Whew. Yeah. That's good. Well, let's see. We got a few more minutes left here. Mm-hmm. I'm going to share one more story.
One more story, Will, and then off to between the lines.
Deciding between a couple, but I'm just going to go ahead here. Let's see. I guess I'll. Yeah, let's do that one. We'll talk about a trip. Well, I guess it wasn't even a trip, really. I spent a summer on North Slope of Alaska working for USGS. Doing loon and shorebird work up there west of Prudhoe Bay, right at the edge of that grand land known as the National Petroleum Reserve. And they just opened the first oil derrick up there at Alpine Oil Field the winter before I got up there. This couple had been doing work for 12 years on swans and loons. And I think 2 months ago, National Geographic had as their feature article the National Petroleum Reserve, and the pictures of that oil field now are scary compared to how they were when I was there in, let's see, when was that, 97, I think. Anyway, we were up there in a remote place. We had to be helicoptered in, and our mode of transportation was Zodiac, those twin inflatable pontoon boats with the transom on the back and outboard motor. And as part of our work, we had to travel over to the Western Delta to get to some traditional loon nest sites.
Is this the Colville River country?
This is the Colville. That's mm-hmm. right. We were right there at the Delta and just a couple miles shy of the Beaufort Sea. And we had to head west. We had to go out of the river down into the Beaufort Sea and head west along the coast there, the edge of the Arctic Ocean. And we stopped at several spots along the way. And it really takes staying close to land, being patient with a propeller that constantly gets trapped in silt, and just keeping your compass in your hand, so you figure your way over there, just constantly knowing that you're heading due west, and because once you get out in that sea, it's hard to tell land from water and clouds from land, and it's just a really confusing situation. The way light works and the way all those flat spaces kind of blend together to confuse your senses. And we headed west a couple different occasions, but this time we were going a little bit further than usual, and there was an inland route to take, but it took quite a bit of portaging. And so we headed out into the sea, and it was supposed to be a 2-day trip. Head out there and check out the nests and camp out for the evening on the tundra and then come home the next day. And we got to a couple of these sites, and on our way out, just to kind of add a little emotional charge to the trip, the family, the Helmricks, who are the bush pilots who fly folks up there, and they flew us out to our camp, they had heard that a couple of polar bears had been seen around. And so that we were kind of on high alert because of that. And so we headed out and got to these loon nests. They're mostly red-throateds and Pacific loons. Found the nest sites, did our work, and we were trying to get the Zodiac back out into the sea and heading back to camp at Swan Camp on the Colville. And the winds picked up. And they picked up so much. We were trying to push the Zodiac out in our hip waders, walking it out as far as we could and hopping in and hope the wind doesn't push you back too far before you drop the motor down and get it started. And we just couldn't pull it off. Every time we got out as far as we could without going over our waders, we'd hop in the boat, drop the motor and start it, and we were already back in the mudflat. The wind pushed us back too quickly, and so the winds picked up. They're probably gusting 40 straight at us, straight south, and we ended up camping for 2 nights on the mudflat, and it was a difficult experience camping at the edge of the ocean on mud and having to walk about a half mile to a mile inland to a freshwater lake to get water and coming back to camp. And then the evenings just were so restless, knowing that polar bears were probably not too far away. It was a pretty disconcerting feeling. It was one of those hard wilderness experiences. And there wasn't, I mean, the retrospect was at all, because during the experience, it was tough. And I wouldn't trade it now, but knowing that your life is a little bit rocky, and you're not too sure if you're going to make it out of this one because of weather or how hard the hardship could get, if it could get any harder, if we were going to be stranded for any more than 2 days. But we got out. 2 days later, we got the boat out, and we got the motor started, and we headed east. And it was one of those times that you're thankful for the experience, which was difficult, but you wouldn't trade it for anything in the world. So, there you go.
That's about it, Will. I guess we're on to Between the Lines, KRFP Moscow.